Welcome back, everyone. Today, we're diving deep into a Supreme Court case that's still stirring up a lot of debate. Employment Division v. Smith. It gets into religious freedom, drug laws, and where the line is in a society like ours.
It's a fascinating case. It really, Oregon's position was pretty straightforward. Peyote was illegal. End of story. No exceptions. And that's how this huge legal battle began, one that went all the way to the Supreme Court.
So we've got religious practice clashing with the law. What was the main question the Supreme Court had to figure out?
The core issue was whether the First Amendment's Free Exercise Clause protected Smith and Black, even though, because of their religious practice, they were breaking the law. It really comes down to, does religious freedom mean you can ignore laws that everyone else has to follow?
Let's break down the Free Exercise Clause for a second, just in case some of our listeners aren't constitutional law experts. What does that part of the First Amendment actually say?
It's surprisingly straightforward. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Basically, the government can't tell you what religion to follow or stop you from practicing your religion.
Sounds simple, but this case shows how complicated it can get. So what did the Supreme Court decide?
Well, the vote was 6-3, and there were strong opinions on both sides. Justice Scalia wrote the majority opinion. He sided with Oregon and upheld the denial of those unemployment benefits.
So the court essentially said, too bad. The law is the law. Doesn't matter what your religion says.
It's a simplification, but yeah, that's basically it. Scalia focused on this concept of neutral laws of general applicability.
Hang on a sec. What does neutral laws of general applicability mean? Sounds like legal jargon to me.
Think of it this way. A neutral law means it applies to everyone the same, no matter their religion. So what the court was saying is that even if a law goes against your religious practices, you don't get to just break it. Everyone has to follow the same rules.
Okay, I think I'm starting to get it, but it still feels a little tricky. Didn't this law, even though it applied to everyone on paper, specifically impact a specific religious practice?
That's a really good point, and that's where things get even more interesting. Scalia argued that the government doesn't have to explain why a law might burden religious practice, as long as that law is neutral and everyone's treated equally under it.
So the court was prioritizing the idea that the law applies equally to everyone over any burden that law might have on specific religious practices.
Exactly. But even within that majority opinion, there were different perspectives. Justice O'Connor agreed with the outcome that Smith and Black shouldn't get benefits. But she wrote a separate concurring opinion.
Wait, she agreed with the decision, but for completely different reasons. Now we're really getting into the legal weeds. Tell me more.
O'Connor thought they should use what's called the compelling state interest test.
Okay, another legal term. What's the compelling state interest test about?
Imagine it like this. The government needs to have a really, really good reason, a vital reason, to restrict your religious freedom. It can't just be any reason. Like, they have to show it's crucial for public safety or some other essential interest. It's a high bar for the government to clear.
So O'Connor thought the government should have had to prove that banning peyote, even for religious purposes, was absolutely necessary to protect something truly vital.
Precisely. In this case, she thought that Oregon's interest in preventing harm from drugs outweighed the need for a religious exemption. But she disagreed with Scalia's broader reasoning about neutral laws.
Wow. They get to the same conclusion, but took very different paths. Shows how interpreting the First Amendment can be so tricky. But wait, there's more, right? It wasn't just a 6-3 decision. Weren't there some pretty strong dissenting opinions, too?
Absolutely. Justice Blackmun, along with Justices Brennan and Marshall, wrote a dissent. They argued that the majority was twisting previous precedents and basically weakening what the Free Exercise Clause protects. They were not happy about it.
So Blackmun and the others thought the court was going too far in limiting religious freedom. What were their main arguments?
They said there wasn't any evidence that religious peyote use was harmful. They even brought up a really interesting comparison.
Hold on, that's where it gets really interesting, right?
Yeah, tell me more. They compared the potential harm of religious peyote use with the harm from alcohol abuse, you know, which has been devastating, especially in Native American communities.
Yeah, that makes you think about how differently we view different substances. It brings in that historical context.
For sure. And the dissent argued that if you deny this exemption, you're basically forcing Native Americans to choose between their faith and their jobs. A tough choice.
So we've got a split decision, strong dissent. This case clearly sparked a huge debate about where religious freedom begins and ends. What happened next? Did this case just fade away, or did it have a lasting impact?
Oh, it didn't fade away at all. It caused a ton of controversy and really changed how we think about religious freedom in the U.S. But that's a story for after the break.
All right, listeners, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back to dive into what happened after this landmark decision and what it all means for us today. Stay tuned. Welcome back. Before the break, we were talking about Employment Division v. Smith, the case that really throws a wrench into the whole idea of religious freedom.
It makes you think about those gray areas where personal rights run up against the need for laws that everyone has to follow. And like we were saying, the Supreme Court's decision really set off a firestorm.
So let's get into the aftermath. What happened after the court made its decision? Did it just fade away or did it have a lasting effect?
It definitely didn't just fade away. The case got everyone talking about religious freedom. Legal experts, religious groups, even policymakers, everyone was weighing in. Some people saw it as necessary, like to keep things running smoothly, but others saw it as chipping away at basic rights.
It seems like with a ruling that split people, especially with such a strong dissent, it'd be open to challenges, maybe even attempts to overturn it completely.
You're right. There was so much pushback against the Smith decision that Congress actually stepped in and passed the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, RFRA for short, back in 1993.
So Congress jumped into the ring. What exactly did RFRA do? Was it directly because of what happened in the Smith case?
It absolutely was. RFRA came about because of the concerns raised by that Smith decision. It was designed to put back a stricter standard, you know, for when the government wants to justify laws that restrict religious practices, even if those laws are neutral and apply to everyone.
So Congress was essentially saying, hey, Supreme Court, you might have gone a bit too far in limiting religious freedom with this whole neutral laws thing.
That's a good way to put it. RFRA says that the government has to demonstrate a compelling governmental interest. And not only that, they have to use the least restrictive means possible to achieve it if a law substantially burdens someone's religious practice. Makes things much harder for the government.
That sounds a lot like the compelling state interest test that Justice O'Connor was talking about in her opinion. It's like Congress took her idea and turned it into law.
You got it. RFRA tips the scales back towards religious freedom. It's way harder for the government to restrict religious practices, even if those practices clash with laws that apply to everyone.
So RFRA comes in and adds another layer of complexity to this whole issue. But did it settle the debate? Or did it just create a whole new set of problems?
Well, it didn't exactly end the debate. Actually, it led to a bunch of new legal battles. People have used it to challenge all sorts of things, from healthcare stuff like the contraceptive mandate and the Affordable Care Act to anti-discrimination laws.
Seriously. So a case about peyote is now being used in cases about healthcare and discrimination. That's crazy.
It is. And that shows how far-reaching that Smith decision and then RFRA really were. We're still dealing with the fallout today. Courts are still trying to figure out the boundaries of RFRA, and it'll probably keep causing controversy for years to come.
Sounds like the Smith case really opened a can of worms when it comes to religious freedom and the limits of government power. But what does this all mean for the average person? For our listener trying to understand it all.
That's the important question, isn't it? What does all this back and forth mean for you in your daily life? It's not just some theoretical legal thing. It has real consequences for how we live, how we work, how we practice our beliefs.
Let's make it concrete then. How does Employment Division v. Smith and the whole RFRA thing affect the average person? What are the real world consequences?
It means the whole question of religious freedom is still being tested, still being defined. It means the courts are still figuring out how to balance the right to practice your religion with the need for laws everyone follows. And it means these issues will probably continue to be debated and fought over in court for years to come.
So the fight over religious freedom, which started with this case about peyote, it's far from
over. Absolutely. This case and all the legal and societal debates that came from it continue to shape how we think about the relationship between religion and the law. And that's something every society has to deal with. It's about finding the balance, the sweet spot, where individual liberty and the common good can work together.
It's amazing how a case about two guys losing their jobs because of peyote could turn into this huge discussion about religious freedom, a new law, and legal challenges that continue decades later. Shows how individual cases can trigger bigger changes in society.
It highlights why it's so important to understand these big decisions, these landmark cases, and the discussions they start. These aren't just old legal rulings. They affect our lives and shape the world we live in.
So we've really dug into the legal arguments, the Supreme Court's decision, the aftermath, even the long-term impact of Employment Division v. Smith. But I feel like there's still something missing. What about the personal side of this story? What happened to Smith and Black after all this? Did they ever get their unemployment benefits? Did they keep facing legal issues because of their religious practices? I'd like to know what this case meant for their lives.
That's a really good point. It's easy to get caught up in the legal stuff and forget that there are real people behind all of it. Real people whose lives are changed by these decisions. So, yeah, let's shift gears a little and look at the human side of this landmark case.
Welcome back. We've been talking about this huge Supreme Court case, Employment Division v. Smith, and how it's impacted religious freedom here in the U.S. Before we finish up, I'm really curious about what happened to the people at the center of it all.
Yeah, it's easy to get lost in the legal back and forth. We need to remember this case is about real people whose lives were affected because of what they believed in.
You know, with all this talk about legal precedents and RFRA, I kind of forgot that this all started with two guys losing their jobs just for practicing their religion. What happened to them in the end?
Well, it's not a simple answer. Their legal battles didn't just stop after the Supreme Court made its decision. Even though RFRA was passed and it was meant to provide more protection for religious practices, it didn't automatically reverse their case.
Really? You'd think that a law specifically designed to address what happened in their case would have had a more direct impact.
You would think so, right? The legal system, though, it can be pretty complicated. It wasn't immediately clear how RFRA applied to cases that had already been decided. It took a while for the courts to work all that out.
So even though RFRA was a response to their case, it didn't immediately change their situation. That's got to be a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah.
Did Smith and Black ever get their unemployment benefits? Were they able to keep practicing their religion without worrying about legal trouble?
Well, it's a mixed bag. They never got those unemployment benefits back. But their case and the whole movement it started, it really did help pave the way for greater religious freedom for others.
It's both inspiring and a little sad. They became these symbols in the fight for religious freedom, but didn't personally get to see all the benefits of the changes they helped create.
Exactly. It just shows that legal battles, they can have these unintended consequences. And progress, well, it can be slow.
This whole deep dive has made me think differently about religious freedom. It's not just a simple idea. It's this constant balancing act, you know, between individual rights, what the government needs, and the needs of a diverse society.
And it's constantly evolving. The whole debate over religious freedom, it didn't stop with Employment Division v. Smith, not even with RFRA. These cases, they're just chapters in a much longer story.
A story that's still being written, right, with new challenges and new ways of interpreting the law always coming up. So for our listeners, what's the takeaway? What should they keep in mind when thinking about these complicated issues?
The biggest takeaway, I think, is that religious freedom, it's important, but it's not unlimited. It exists within the framework of laws and what society sees as acceptable. And that means we need to keep talking about it, carefully think about the rights and interests of everyone involved.
It's about finding that balance, that place where individual liberty and what's good for everyone, the common good, can both exist.
Right. And that's a conversation we need to have as individuals, as communities, and as a country.
So, listener, what do you think? What's your take on religious freedom and where the law should draw the line? How do you think we can best navigate these tough and often controversial topics? We'll leave you with those questions to think about. And that wraps up our deep dive for today.